Coming up next, another edition of Reaching Out with Gregory Floyd, president of Teamsters Local 237.
Welcome to another edition of Reaching Out. I'm Gregory Floyd, president of Local 237 Teamsters. With us once again, very special guest, Senator Andrea Stewart Cousins. She is the leader of the New York State Senate. She was first elected to the Senate in 2006. Senator Stewart Cousins currently represents Greensboro, Mount Pleasant, and a significant portion of Yonkers. In 2019, she shattered the glass ceiling when her peers elected her as temporary president and majority leader of the state, New York State Senate, made history as the first woman and African-American woman to lead the New York State Senate Legislative Conference. During her tenure, the majority leader oversaw the passage of historic and life-changing legislation on issues including voting reforms, gun safety, and women's rights and health care, immigration, LGBTQ rights, the justice system, and sexual harassment in the workplace. Additionally, under her leadership, the most comprehensive and aggressive climate change legislation in the nation and the strongest tenant protections and affordable housing package in state history were passed. Senator Majority Leader Stewart Cousins resides in Yonkers, was married to the late Thomas Cousins, and has three children and six grandchildren. Welcome back to Reaching Out. Thank you for coming on.
Thank you so much, Greg. I appreciate it. And I certainly have to thank you for your leadership over the years, because you too have, just because your membership is the largest, in the union. And, I'm sure you're a ceiling shatterer and a history maker as well. And the fact that you have had a sustained and steady hand has made, my job easier as it relates to helping working folks. So I just thank you for your friendship over the years.
Thank you for the compliment. And our first question is, you just wrapped up the 2023 legislative session in Albany.
Yeah.
How would you sum it up?
It was a roller coaster ride. I'd say, no, there has been nothing predictable. And that's been since I first came in 2007. I never forget that I spoke to the late Jay Gallagher, who was in charge of, the Gannett newspapers. And I came in at the same time that Elliot Spitzer came in. And Elliot Spitzer had this thing, day one, everything changes. That was his motto when he became governor. And I remember Jay Gallagher saying to me, nothing ever changes in Albany. Why does he think that this is going to change? And I said, look, at that point, I had just beat a 28-year incumbent, somebody who was well-known. And so I said, the fact that I'm here, Jay, means that things are changing. Well, I don't know whether then Governor Spitzer was that a promise? Was that a curse? I don't know. But I can tell you that there has not been one predictable year in Albany. And this was no different. The budget, went on a lot longer. The budget negotiations went on a lot longer. There were a lot of major, major policy changes that the governor put in there, whether it was, again, back, to bail reform, to the housing compact, to charter schools, a lot of huge policy, as well as, budgetary things that we knew we needed to work harder on, such as the minimum wage. What her initial proposal was just to start indexing. We always wanted it to be more cost of living. She started at about 2.5. We knew that had to come up. We got it up to 4%. The help for our safety net hospitals, the help for you know, our Sunnis and CUNY. I mean, the list goes on and on and on. So the budget was protracted. But again, I think we came out with some amazing wins for workers, for working families, and for the overall health of New Yorkers. And then, of course, we had the legislative session, which was remarkable because we tackled a lot of these other issues that, you know, we didn't, you know, tackle before, whether it was what we tried, but all of us hadn't agreed, whether it's clean slate, wrongful convictions. And, you know, so we tackled, you know, other things that had taken many, many years to sort of push through. But, you know, I'm very, very proud of what we've done. And you know, now we're back in our districts and we will continue to have our ears to the ground and go back to Albany when the time comes, presumably in January, and continue to do the work on behalf of the folks that we represent.
If you had one piece of legislation that was passed this year that made you the most proudest, what would it be?
You know, I cannot say that it's, I don't, you know, I look at all of these things as extremely important. You know, we did a lot of work. Again, there's so many rollbacks on a federal level as it relates to our rights, as it relates to voting, as it relates to you know, common sense gun laws. And I mean, I think generally, I'm very proud that we continue to say New York is a place where we respect people and we respect everybody. And we want to create an opportunity so that everybody can reach their full potential. And that means we want you to have you know, the care that you need in every part of your life, whomever you are. You know, we want you to be able to live in a healthy environment. And we want to make sure that when we do our you know, climate work, that we are not only doing it so that we will have a habitable planet, but that also the labor force is involved. And I'm so proud that we continue to invest in education. Like we call our conference the Education Conference. And that's because when I first ran in 2004, the first time I ran for Senate, it was because it had already been proven in the courts that our poorest districts had been robbed, quite honestly, of the resources they should have had. Senator Robert Jackson was one of the plaintiffs who walked up to Albany. He sued on behalf of his kids and other kids to make sure that we invested in these schools. And after the case was won, the majority and the governor at that time, the Republican majority and the governor at that time said, well, you know, we know that it was a problem, but it's really just too expensive to solve. Our conference understood it was too expensive not to solve, and that people had already paid the price, and we didn't want the next generation and the next generation to continue to pay. And so we made sure over the past 3 years that we paid back that money, and that no school has you know, has anything that this state owes them, because we owe our children an education. We owe our children an opportunity to be the next Greg Floyd, to be the next, you know, me, to compete in a global society. So I'm very proud of the emphasis that we put on education. And like I said, we're a pre-K through college kind of place and career. So we've expanded childcare access. We've expanded, like, universal pre-K was really focused on New York City. And now we have expanded the resources so that it is across the state. If you want your you know, child to be involved in a universal pre-K program, all across the state now, there's access to resources in order to do that. And we've made unprecedented investments in SUNY and CUNY in terms of not only the operational and the you know professional costs, but also in terms of infrastructure to make sure that we are building campuses and capabilities of the future. And again, all of these with you know union workers, all of this with a mind to creating the next skilled and capable generation. So that we could continue to be leaders. So I don't think there's one thing. I think it's everything. And I will say that I'm happy that we are also looking at impacts. You know, when you talk about something like wrongful conviction, I mean, we have Dr. Yusuf Salam, you know, who is running for city council, one of the exonerated five, part of the Central Park Five. You know, unless there was some folks who actually sort of kind of volunteered to help after it was very, very clear that, you know, these young people at that time were not really, you know, they weren't really guilty. There were no resources to really help them. It was basically pro bono work from outside. So, I mean, we're committed to once you have, you know, you have your DNA, you have whatever it is that is a material difference in what, you know, was presented. And now, you know, it's clear that you couldn't have done it. You know, there's resources for that. And even again, clean slate, you know, there's a worker shortage everywhere. And I ran into a guy who was a computer technician, and I'm sure this story is, you know, repeated over and over again. But here he is, 50 something. You know, he made a dumb mistake when he was 21. He paid his dues. It was a misdemeanor. He, you know, and he's been free of any interaction, negative interaction with the law for over 30 years. But yet, every time he goes to submit, you know, for work, this thing pops up. So, I mean, clean slate, when it comes to misdemeanors, after 3 years, you're off parole, you did this, that, you know, it's over. You can't have perpetual punishment and not allow people to, again, take a civil service exam or be able to be eligible for certain forms of housing or even be able to be eligible for work. So, I think that, you know, I wish I could say, well, I guess I'm glad I can't say that there's one thing, because I just truly believe that everything we do has the capability of changing in a positive way the life of New Yorkers.
You're listening to Reaching Out. I'm Gregory Floyd, President of Local 237 Teamsters. With us, our very special guest, Senate Majority Leader Andrea Stewart-Cousins. Is there a piece of legislation that wasn't passed that you would revisit in the next session?
Probably, I mean, so just so you know, in my conference, I have, including myself, 42 members, and the Senate itself is 63 members. All of these members put in countless numbers of bills, and you know, I'm sure there are certain things that, you know, there, you know, could have had we had the time or additional information or whatever would have been passed. I think, though, you know, for the most part, everything that really we could pass that would be meaningful to New Yorkers, we did pass. But like I said, we always live to fight another day. And when we come back, obviously there will be more things on the horizon. But I don't think, now, honestly, if you talk to any of my members, they say, oh, I wish we would have done this. You know that. There'd be a lot of it. Yes. But I think, like I said, I always strive, as I'm sure you do, and most of us who have tried to navigate life and living and trying to do well, I always strive for happy-ish, you know. So if, you know, everybody might not be happy, but I want everybody to be happy-ish. I think, though, the housing situation, because we do understand that there is a critical need for more housing, for more affordable housing. It's why we continue again as a conference to invest in tenant protections, because we know there's a shortage and we want people to be able to maintain their apartments and maintain their homes. We've invested in small homeowners, trying to make sure that they have the resources if they're facing foreclosure. And obviously, we want to see more housing build, more affordable housing. We also invested again in NYCHA. We're always putting resources, because I grew up in public housing and I understand, you know, how that, the ability to have an affordable apartment. I mean, my parents, that was where we lived. And I'm sorry that on a federal level, there's such a disinvestment in public housing. But I know how important it is, as does my conference. We continue to do that. But, you know, if anything, I would love to, again, we need to get everybody at the table. We need to really hammer out how we go forward in creating more housing, more affordable housing, how we, in my opinion, create the next quote unquote Mitchell Llama. I mean, it has to be a program as far as I'm concerned. And Mitchell and Llama were state legislators that put together an affordable housing program that went for decades. I think we have to do that. And I know it's more expensive than ever to build, and certainly expensive to build affordable units, but I can't believe with such a dire need that if we get labor at the table, and if we get the developers at the table, if we get the tenant advocates at the table, and legislative leaders at the table, and all the stakeholders, you know, to like try and figure out like what does it take in order for us to start creating an environment that really not only maintains the housing that's here, you know, make sure that we get these abandoned buildings and you know, things that could be rehabilitated and put, you know, on the market affordably, the commercial properties that are not being used as commercial spaces anymore, how do we convert them into affordable spaces? And while we're respecting communities, while we're incentivizing, you know, further growth, while we're making sure there's good union jobs. I mean, we've got to do that. And that will be, I think that will be the project, you know, not only while we're out, but again next year, because there has to be a way forward.
In terms of supporting workers, what types of laws and policies produced in this session benefited them the most?
Well, always, you know, again, when I go back to raising the minimum wage, you know, when you raise the floor, you know, everything else.
Sure.
Raises.
Sure.
So,
yes.
You know, I think that is incredibly important. We were able also, Senator Ramos passed a warehouse worker bill, so that warehouse workers would be protected. And we even passed yet another version of the SWEAT bill, which will allow for, again, employees to have more say as it relates to working conditions. Obviously, as I said, we did the increase in cost of living for certainly a lot of our state agencies, including all of the O agencies. We are having robust labor standards in our building Build Public Renewables Act, so that as we are working to clean up our environment, we are again putting labor standards in there. We've tried to make sure that insulin is not, you know, people are not priced out of their insulin. So we've managed to do that. I think, you know, our conference looks at everything again through the lenses of workers. So, I mean, even in terms of the tax credits for children and working families, we have increased the employer child tax credit, as well as on a state level, we started covering kids from 0 to 4. For some reason, it was only starting at 5. So, I mean, you know, so we try and help, you know, working people and working families in every way. And again, everything that we do, we are looking at it from the lens of working people. So, you know, we had done some tier 5, tier 6 reforms. We went back with a lot of different bills that have been vetoed before that would help, you know, different people in stages of whether it's you know, retirement or age. We continue to try and push the envelope on behalf of working men and women.
Very good. Very good. I don't think we have a lot of time left. However, is there something that you would like to bring up that we haven't brought up?
You know, we had very, very interestingly, at the end of the session, one of the things that happened in the conference was this is a national, international, local situation. It was a conversation about a commission to study reparations and what the role of New York was in terms of the slave trade. And it was something that so many members in both houses had been pushing for a very, very long time. California did it. And we, obviously, before anything happens, we have a conference. And the amazing conversation around New York, New York's role, and the building of Wall Street, for example, the settling along the Hudson River, by even in my district, Yonkers is the Dutch name for a young lad, Yonkers. And it was settled by the Dutch and was very, very involved in the slave trade. So people were talking, Black, white, Latino, Asian. We have the most diverse Senate conference that's ever, ever existed in that chamber. And every single one of them affirmed the fact that we need to know our history and we need to be able to account for that history. And the emotion around moving that piece of legislation was very surprising to me. I mean, there were tears. So, you know, we cannot just erase history. We can't ignore it. We can't think that it's going to make people feel too uncomfortable. My experience in that conference and subsequent debate was that there's never, never enough information and education. And if we have it, we'll all be kinder. We'll all be more compassionate to each other and we'll be more responsible to one another going forward. So I think that was kind of a very surprising reaction, you know, in the conference. And like I said, I think the assembly certainly passed that as well, but it's something that your members might not even have been aware of, but I think something that will impact all of us. And again, I think it's nation leading while people are trying to erase history and ban books. You know, we're not going in that direction.
Right. You could ban books, but you can't ban what happened. You can't ban people from finding out what happened. And to bury the truth is just going to hurt you in the future.
And, you know, again, in general, I said we're trying to fight back, whether it's, you know, anti-Semitism, Asian hate, all of this. You know, we really are clear about hate having no place in New York. You know, and if we work together, we will prosper together. And if we prosper together, we will continue to progress and we'll be able to be that beacon that actually I think the nation and the world needs. So, you know, onward.
And as we say, New York leads.
New York leads.
New York leads.
And New York creates great leaders. So, you certainly are among them. So,
So are you. And I really appreciate you. And we really appreciate you coming on, reaching out once again. Our very special guest was Andrea Stewart-Cousins. She is the Majority Senate Leader of New York State. Thank you once again for coming on Reaching Out.
Thank you so much, Mr. President. Have a great day. And thank you to your viewers and listeners.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening. And don't forget to tune in again each and every Saturday at this same time for another edition of Reaching Out with Gregory Floyd, president of Teamsters Local 237.